Today, we're exploring what happens when you make a reality all your own. And some people say this whole rags to riches thing is just part of the American dream. Well, it turns out Canadians have that dream too.
Think of this story as a tutorial on how to make that moolah. And Frank Bourassa...
Yeah, Bourassa. It's actually French.
He's our guru. On his website, his bio reads, Insane Million Making Master Earner. And that's technically true. But first, let's go back to when Frank was in his early 30s, when he made the most regrettable error of his professional life. Getting rich legally. At the time, he had started and owned a brake pad and brake shoe business.
I liked it an awful lot. It paid very well. I loved it.
But of course...
I worked my ass off in that, and I worked so much, I ended up in the hospital. I was burnt out. I was popping tranquilizers like on the Pez dispensers. It was awful. At one point, I think it was at a red light. You know, it just occurred to me, you know, we work our asses off. We get up every, you know, day at 7 o'clock. Who wants to get up at 7 o'clock? I mean, nobody does. And everybody does that if, for one single purpose. It's only to get money. Am I right or am I right, you know? So I said to myself, you know, why not just go straight to the money? I got to print my own money. And it's how the idea, you know, came about. It was at a red light.
So just like that, Frank decided he wanted to counterfeit U.S. money because it's the most commonly used currency in the world. Truth be told, this wasn't Frank's first time breaking the law. In eighth grade, he ran a shoplifting ring, and he stole some cars as an adolescent. But this was by far the most audacious project he had ever set his sights on.
All my life, I tend not to do that good with moderation. You know, it's just how I am. So go big and go home, hopefully, yeah.
So where did the aspiring counterfeiter go to learn about the trade? He went right to the source, which is actually secretservice.gov. The website proudly displayed all the latest security features embedded in banknotes that make it frustrating for your average Kinko counterfeiter. For example, take a $20 bill. I got one here. I'm going to hold it up to the light. And there's that invisible Jackson face.
And then you have a special type of printing, forbidden font, serial number, color shifting ink, little tiny eagle. And then you have the security thread after that, polymer strip, raised ink printing. It gives the crispiness, some UV fibers, secret fonts. So you get with this huge to-do list, which you know nothing about.
Frank spent hours in counterfeiter chat rooms and forums learning how to produce that flawless fake 20. So step one, and the most difficult step,
the super complex paper recipe. It's 75% cotton and 25% linen. While any of those two are, you know, not that difficult to get separately, when you start combining those two at this particular ratio, you know, it raises red flags everywhere.
If the paper mill saw what Frank was getting at, they would probably say, "Yep, we can make that paper for you, Frank." And the next thing you know, it's the FBI. So Frank called a paper mill in Switzerland.
You cannot just be, you know, that Joe Blow calling from, you know, out of the blue. And my story was that I created this Wall Street blue chip paper trading company. Keystone Investment and Trading Company is what it was. I was Jackson Maxwell then. The premise was that as one of the higher-ups, I was in charge of tackling, you know, some new bonds that we wanted to put on the market.
$20 bonds, of course. Frank asked the paper mill if they had any suggestions on how to make their bonds more secure.
You know, there's some special fibers and special chemical and special this, you know, could you do that too? Or is that too complicated a thing for you? No, we could do that. Well, great. I used on them, you know, what I call my sandwich effect. If you try to shove in a whole sandwich in anybody's mouth, you know, obviously they're going to choke on it. You got to, you know, feed them one bite at a time and, you know, give them time to swallow that. You can get them to swallow, you know, a whole bread loaf if you want.
Over the next months, Frank subtly tweaked his order, asking them to add more security features to, you know, fool counterfeiters. He asked them to add linen to the cotton, then chemicals that can pass the security pen and black light test.
Could you put, you know, the face of the president of our company? Say, yeah, whatever, you know, drawing you like, you just send it in and we'll have it produced for you.
Okay, but like, didn't they like see the Jackson sketch and be like, hey, this is the guy on the 20. Like, was that not obvious to them?
Yeah, it sure is obvious for you. Because, you know, it's your everyday currency. But if I'm to discuss, you know, the watermark of Pakistan currency, I mean, you couldn't tell apart to whatever face they have on there. So to them, Andrew Jackson is nobody.
Finally, after 2 years, Frank picked up his perfect paper at the Port of Montreal. But he still had to take it home and run it through his printing press to make it look like a real $20 bill.
Once the actual printing started, it was the best day of my life, I would say, because, you know, it's a combination of so many things and hard work, and look at the reward, my friend, it's awesome, you know, we'd print 200K per hour, so, I mean, money's pouring out of the presses, you got stacks and stacks, and you got 3-foot stacks of it, you know, everywhere. It was beautiful, the most beautiful thing I ever saw.
But was there any point where, like, you thought to yourself, like, I should quit, or I shouldn't be doing this?
No. It's just not within my DNA. Can it happen? It cannot happen. No. If I decide to go to the moon, I sure to go to the moon. That's for sure.
Also, Frank figured that if he did get caught, he was in Canada. He'd probably be sentenced to maybe 6 years and only serve one. Plus, Frank was sure that the authorities would never be onto him.
I use my guts. It's hard to describe. It either feels right or it doesn't. It gives me a kick and then, come on, that's awesome, let's go. And my gut is never wrong.
Frank hid the money in a secret location. Then he hired an old friend who would sell the counterfeits for him so Frank could keep his hands clean. Now, Frank expected his phony money to sell like hot pockets. But for months, no one wanted his bills.
It was frustrating and I was doing nothing but wasting my time and waiting and waiting.
At first, Frank was giving out $2,000 wads like free candy. And when he finally got his first customer, they only wanted a small order of $10,000, which he would sell for 30 cents on the dollar. But then, one of his customers bumped it up to $100,000.
It was the second $100,000 order from the same customer. The first repeat. Then I knew that I was so rich.
But what did he do with all that real cash?
Well, you should have, you know, popped out at least a bottle of champagne, one at least. But I didn't do that. You know, was right back to work. I didn't change any part of my lifestyle. I still have the same car. Same clothes. I don't have any fur coat or stuff like that. I don't do that. You know, I wanted to have it done as soon as possible and sell it. And, you know, I was all work. It was all business.
His customers went up to 250,000, then 500, then finally 1 million. Soon, word got around and Frank had buyers in almost every continent. And then Frank's friend found another customer, this time a local guy, and a $100,000 deal was set up for the very next day. But Frank was short on time. So he did something kind of stupid. He drove his car, picked up the counterfeits, and showed up to the rendezvous point himself.
It was a very, very safe location, and everything felt good.
Frank's friend was there in the parking lot waiting for the handoff.
I said, all right, so, you know, to give it to me, and I'll call you later, you know, when this is done. I said, no, I'll just, you know, pull in over there. There was a garage there nearby. Well, what do you want to pull in? Just give it to me. No, I don't want to give it to you. I'm just going to pull in there. What is it with you this morning? There's nothing with me this morning. Yeah, stupid little argument. But, you know, I know my gut kept saying, you know, just pull in there.
So Frank drove his car into the building's garage and handed the counterfeits to his friend. Then Frank drove away and his buddy finished the deal in person.
Bada bing, bada boom. Was it as simple as that? Yep. So a week after the purchase with this new customer, I was asleep at my girlfriend's house this night. And at 5 o'clock, boom. My girlfriend woke up and he said, wake up, wake up. I said, well, why wake up? What's happening? He said, well, people are knocking. It's the police. I think it's the police. Then I opened up my eyes. I said, not today. I knew. Well, they knocked and then we opened up the door and then, you know, a swarm of officers poured in the house. My main thought was protect my girlfriend. You know, her children were there and they were crying. The first two grabbed me, the next two grabbed my girlfriend, and then they want to, you know, go closer and tell her, you know, just sit tight and, you know, let me do my thing. But you can't even say that. You can't do that because they're pulling her away from me and I want to get closer. It's devastating. It's devastating. My heart was bleeding. Swarm of officers poured in the house. My main thought was protect my girlfriend. You know, her children were there and they were crying. The first two grabbed me, the next two grabbed my girlfriend. And I was with her for a long time, 14 years. She knew what I was about, but she didn't know what I did. I mean, she just freaked out and she started screaming at me. You know, they got their warrants out and everything, and then they searched the house. They were so happy because, like I said, at the beginning of every new customer, you know, I had to hand out some sample as well. I had a million sitting in the basement, and Jesus Christ, they were really thrilled with that. I could hear him downstairs, you know, going, woo-hoo! I kept saying to myself, you know, Jesus Christ, calm down. Those are just sample I'm handing out. You know, this is nothing. But I didn't find it funny in no mean.
It turned out, Frank was selling his counterfeits to a local undercover cop. Frank was taken to a holding cell where he was interrogated by the RCMP, which is kind of like the Canadian Secret Service.
They said, well, we want to talk to you about all that we found. And I said, well, I have nothing to say. You know, my lawyers come in and I have nothing to say. He said, well, you might because, you know, I'm going to seize the house. I'm going to seize the vehicles out there. That was implying my girlfriend's house because it was hers. I was at her place. You can't let that happen. She doesn't have anything to do with that. And then as soon as they found out about this leverage, I was a parrot from then on. I mean, it was just me, I mean, pouring and pouring about, you know, everything being mine and mine and mine. And I was so done. My life was over.
As the RCMP wrapped up their interrogation, Frank was perplexed to see two men enter the room. Americans.
The U.S. Secret Service come in. I was stunned. They're telling me that according to this article of law and blah, 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 which they had me read, they said, so that's it. So we're just finishing up here and then we'll leave. I said, what do you mean we'll leave? Where to? He said, well, you're coming with us in the U.S.
Despite Frank's attention to detail, he failed to consider that since he counterfeited U.S. dollars, the Secret Service could intervene. After all, that's what the Secret Service was first created for, to stop counterfeit money. They told Frank that he could serve up to 60 years in a federal prison.
Whoa. You know, that meant I wasn't going to see, you know, my father anymore until he died. And, you know, I was to have no visits because it was too far. I was, you know, well, my life was over.
Frank was sent to jail without bond. And a week later, his lawyer stopped by.
And then he's facing me, you know, beside the glass. And he said, hi, Frank, how's it going? I said, how the f*** do you think I'm going? You know, they want to ship me stateside. Well, I'm crushed. Calm down. I halted the extradition. You're going nowhere. You're staying here.
Remember Frank's gut instinct to drive into that building to make that trade-off? Well, that saved him big time. On the day of the transaction, some helicopter footage had only showed Frank's car driving in and out of the building's garage and nothing else. No handoff. So without solid proof, Frank would no longer be extradited to the U.S. He'd only be tried in Canada.
Jesus Christ, I was floating on air. Because now my math was that, you know, worst case scenario was to get, you know, 6-8 years-ish. So that came back as a reality. So I was floating on air.
But still, it wasn't over for Frank. He was actually facing 12 years in Canada instead of the 6 he had originally hoped. But he figured he'd try his luck again. He sent his lawyer back into the court to fight the sentence.
They would argue, and then when they would come out, and then I would refuse. He went from 12 and 8 and 10 and 9 and 7. And then at some point, it started to get, you know, really formal, you know. As your lawyer, you know, I'm here to represent you. I'm here to get what's best out of it from you. I advise that you take this. I understand that. I do not accept. Then we get pissed and we fight. Then I said, well, I need, first of all, I need my girlfriend's house back. I need all the cars back. I need to make sure she's cleared of everything. This is on top of the list. Otherwise, I don't care. Then we came down to 5 and I'd still say no. And then we'd come up in the court, in the hallway, and say, well, what do you want me to do? Where do you want to go with it? Did you want a $5 fine? What it is that you want from me? I was pushing the guy. He's the greatest lawyer in the whole world. And I got him down to 3 years. Well, I got 3 today, and that's it. He's pissed. I mean, you can't even talk anymore. We just yell. I said, I'm not taking 3. Well, that's all right. You're not taking 3. We're going to trial today. So brace yourself. All right, let's go to trial. I knew I had some cards sitting there. I didn't tell anyone. There's a little hallway in between a double door type of thing. And when me and my lawyer, we get both inside the double door, I said, hey, I gotta talk to you about something. He said, there's no talking anymore. The trial's beginning. He's inside. It's right now. And there's nothing more to be said. Yeah, I got to tell you about that. What do you want? Would it be any good? Could you do something good if I told you I had $200 million that I could give? So what do you mean you got $200 million?
Yep. Frank still had $200 million secretly stashed somewhere out there over the rainbow. So Frank wanted to negotiate on his own terms. He would give back his remaining stash to the Crown, but in exchange, he wanted to do no time.
And then he said, you gotta be kidding me, are you crazy? Said, yeah, sure I am, yes. But can you do anything good with that? Wait for me. So I wait right there, right outside the double door. He went inside the courtroom, he talked to the Crown for 30 seconds. Both of them zoomed right back by me out of the courtroom. The deal was one for 3 years, and it was to go to no time, zero.
Well, obviously, the Crown couldn't turn down getting $200 million counterfeit dollars off the streets. So they took the deal, but they upped the stakes. Because not only did they want the money, they still wanted Frank behind bars. So instead of getting Frank to just hand over the money the next day, the Crown strategically set the money return date a month out in advance. Why? If the Crown could somehow find the stash before that date, the whole plea deal would be off. For the next month, it was a crazy race for the government to find the cash and Frank to hope that they wouldn't.
From this second on, they were behind me 24/7 every day. I would often wake up, they'd be right in front of where I lived, and they'd sit there and they'd just wait for me to leave, and then they would just trail me all day.
Frank was sure that his phones were tapped, so he just kept his mouth shut for a month. Then finally, the date arrived. That morning, he was greeted by a motorcade of 6 black SUVs and a K-9 unit.
They were really pissed because, like I said, the whole plan was for them to catch me with this additional money, and they failed at that, so they were really pissed. So we get in their SUVs. And we drive over there.
When they finally arrived at the secret spot, it was just a hotel parking lot. There, Frank pointed to a regular old storage truck that was protected by nothing but a small padlock.
It was in plain sight. The money was there, and they counted everything. And I'm just standing outside in the parking lot and just watching it. And it was, it was surreal even that it had, you know, worked exactly like I had planned it. I had gotten away, and it was something I would never do again. But Jesus Christ, pull even this off? I mean, where's the limit? Do I even have a limit? Everything was going smoothly, and then we drove to the police headquarters. And then I said, well, it's a good thing that, this is done. You got your, big bust. And, I got my, I think it's a win-win. Plus, I'll never do that again. I said, well, maybe you're happy. What do you mean? What was that supposed to mean? I don't know. You tell us. I didn't know. I didn't have a clue.
Apparently, after the deal between Frank and the Crown was struck, the Secret Service discovered that something wasn't adding up. They went to the paper mill in Switzerland and found out that with the amount of paper Frank had ordered, he had probably printed closer to 250 million, not 200.
They knew 50, was missing. But it wasn't missing. It wasn't missing like I sneaked it out of there. I sold it. So I had 200 left. I'll give it back. I didn't know.
Whether that's the truth, at least the Secret Service will never know.
It might very well be in a hayfield near a Buxton, alongside a brick wall under a rock that doesn't have no earthly reason of being there.
Is that a confession?
Who knows? It might be there. It might not. If you go check it out, let me know. Let me know what you're finding.
I don't know how you do it, Frank, but thank you for sharing your story. Frank is now on the other side of the law. He's a counterfeit protection consultant with business and government clients all over the world. And he guarantees that once he secures a system or currency, even he cannot hack or duplicate it. Frank has big plans for even the U.S. Well, if Big Brother gets on board.
I thought for sure, and I would have loved to help out the U.S. currency. They got billions and billions getting counterfeited every year. I could stop that. I could pay for the Obamacare myself. But is that going to happen? I would love, but we'll see. Hopefully, we'll see.
All right, Frank, we'll be waiting for you to pay for Obamacare all by yourself. We'll have a link to all things Frank on our website, snapjudgment.org. Original sound design for that piece was by Leon Morimoto. It was produced by Davey Kemp.